This Monday.com ad was created by a team of people and AI agents. The agents wrote the copy and managed the timelines, while our human creative director made sure it all made sense. Easy. Create your own AI agent today on Monday.com.
This week on Lunchbox Envy, one third of Chinese tourists pack them when traveling abroad.
It was Leonardo DiCaprio's childhood nickname.
And there's a train in Japan that runs off them.
It's noodles, baby!
Woo!
Noodles. I am so
excited.
This is a big, big topic. I think I want to start by saying that. There is...
Why don't you start by saying hello and then say that?
Oh, yeah, okay. Hello. Hello and welcome to Lunchbox Envy. I'm Rosie, a chef and food writer, and I'm here with QIL's Manu and Alex.
Hello.
Hello.
I've eaten nothing all day. I am actually so pumped for this episode. I'm ready to eat a lot of noodles.
Everyone's buzzing for this one. Whose idea was this? Thank you very much.
Me, actually.
Yeah, I don't think I can claim it.
Yeah.
It's a big, big topic, and I think probably worth saying that we might not cover it all in one go.
Definitely
absolutely
not. This is a toe
not.
In the water, a toe in the noodly broth.
But also quite an abstract topic, right? Because noodles means so many different things.
What is a noodle? Yeah.
You know, to certain people, a noodle will mean something else. Particularly, I'm talking about you Americans.
Yeah. Off the bat, can we just exclude the American interpretation of noodle?
As in
what?
Pasta.
Yes. Yeah. We've done pasta, no pasta.
It ain't pasta, baby. It's noodles. I don't know why I keep saying baby.
It comes in a lot of forms and shapes.
So
the definition I got was that it's an unleavened dough or starch paste that has been rolled or stretched or pulled or cut or shaved or extruded. Mm-hmm. And it can be made of like wheat or buckwheat or rice or bean starch or potato starch or millet.
Mm-hmm. Loads of different starches. Yes. Yeah.
It's maybe the oldest convenience food.
Yeah.
According to history, according to historians.
According to history. That sounds like a kind
history
of
itself,
my fact thing that I would say.
We should address the three facts we said at the top of the show because they're actually all quite interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So there was a 2016 survey by AliTrip, which is Alibaba's travel site, that found that 31% of Chinese tourists pack instant noodles when traveling abroad.
Honestly, can relate. Like, there's nothing worse than getting caught short in a hotel if you arrive late and you've got a kettle in your room. You've got dinner.
Yeah.
You can also eat those bad boys raw.
What,
you
like
can
biscuit?
Eat them raw. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can eat them like a crisp.
Yeah, because they're already fried and cooked.
If you're stuck in the airport.
Yeah. Nom, nom, nom.
Yeah, Leonardo DiCaprio. He was an actor, but then he was also apparently a very big breakdancer.
What?
When he was a kid. And at age 11, he came second in a breakdancing competition in Germany and nearly quit acting to go and do that full time. And his nickname was The Noodle. I guess because he was like
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Manny, you said there's a train. So this is a sightseeing railway in the Miyazaki prefecture. It runs off biodiesel made partly from waste tonkotsu ramen broth.
Whoa.
Great.
Yeah, they extract the fat from the kind of like the broth and mix it with cooking
oil.
Well,
it's really fatty tonkotsu.
Is it?
It's literally rendered pork back fat that is used to make it that milky, creamy texture.
Whoa, so it's like emulsified. It's not just a layer.
No,
pork.
It's emulsified.
That sounds lovely.
But apparently the exhaust fumes smell of fried rice.
I love it.
Dreamy.
Oh my God.
I actually can't. I'm hopefully going to Japan next year and I'm definitely going to. It's like all my favourite things to get, like trains,
delicious
food.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
My favourite Japanese noodle is actually it's called tsukemen and it's dipping ramen. So basically you get ramen noodles that are cooked and served cold, but then you have a hot broth and you have like all your little accoutrements that you would normally have, like sliced meat, whatever. And you as you eat, you basically take your cold noodles and you dip them into that boiling hot, creamy, fatty broth. Oh my God, it's really addictive and
sounds
delicious.
Like hot pot, but without the hot pot, just a bowl.
Yeah, and it's like way less broth. Like you're not cooking them in there. Mm-hmm. They're cooked.
Just
you're kind of getting this like textural sensory thing. And the broth is really thick. It's not even, broth is maybe generous. Like it's thick and creamy, so it clings to it.
You guys must have been to the Japan Center in the square, which is great. Outside of it, they've got a sign, sort of sculpture, a mechanical sculpture on a plinth outside to advertise, that's a big bowl with a pair of chopsticks holding a bunch of noodles, and it's like going up and down, mm-hmm. the way they've built it, because like you can't see the mechanics, it's kind of like, it looks like a floating, wow. It's very kind of Diagon Alley, and yeah, like I just makes me salivate every time I walk past. Aww. It's like the best sign. I love it.
So what form do you prefer to take your noodles? Because what's so interesting orally. About them for me is gross. Yes. Is that they are not constrained to one cookery mm-mm. technique, right? No. You both mentioned stir-fried versions. Mm-hmm. I mentioned in soup, mm-hmm. but you will eat them in salads. You will mm-hmm. eat them in cold dishes.
Yeah.
You will eat them in
desserts as well. Vermicelli noodles.
Mm-hmm. Even in rice dishes, mm-hmm. noodles and rice.
Oh, there's that drink with noodles in it as well that I can't remember. It's vermicelli noodles in that kind of milky.
Yeah. Oh,
it's really good.
I actually wanted to talk a little bit about Wagamama.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Because when I was thinking about, like, my history with noodles, the storied past that we have together, the real gateway drug.
Very generationally important to us.
Generationally important. Like, it's also very significant for restaurants, generally speaking. Like, mm-hmm. a massive, successful franchise that revolutionized casual dining, all day dining.
Because what is it? It's like, is it just fusion, an Asian fusion?
Well, it didn't used to be. That's the point. Wagamama used to be strictly Japanese food.
Okay.
So I remember my dad telling me about this place, Wagamama, when I was little. Mm-hmm. And my dad's a massive Chelsea fan. So he'd come up to London mm-hmm. a lot to go to Chelsea games. And he's an ex-Londoner himself. And he kept telling me that he was going to get noodles at Wagamama. And I was so jealous. And then one day I got to go to a Chelsea game with mm-hmm. him. So he took me to Wagamama. Mm-hmm. And it was literally magical to me because I'd never really eaten good Asian food. And look, I think we all know now that Wagamama is a very much an appropriation of Pan-Asian cooking, which isn't even a thing, Pan-Asian. But like at the time, it was probably one of the better approximations of Japanese food that the UK had.
Mm.
And I had this clear chicken ramen, this like super clear broth, and I just like see my noodles in the bottom and this pile of spring onions. And I was just like, this is literally the best thing I've ever eaten in my entire life. And it was also just so cool because we scribbled on those pieces of paper.
It was very interesting. You were sitting in long tables.
Yeah.
The way they scribble on your tables is a bit excessive.
Yeah.
And if you add numbers, really weird food comes out, like mm-hmm. a carrot shoved inside a whole live chicken, and they really confuse them.
Wagamama was launched in the UK in 1992. By the way.
Wow. The year of my birth. That explains so much.
Yeah.
The two things that came about in 1992 were Wagamama and Sister Act 2. And that is very my personality in a nutshell. Anyway, this is not the Wagamama episode. On noodles generally.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Where did they come from?
Well, it's a bit of a debate between the Italians and the Chinese because they both invented very similar foods around the same time. Mm. So the Italians are like, we were the first to create the long, stringy, wheat-based, doughy, noodly thing.
Yeah.
And then the Chinese are like, actually, excuse me. And it turns out it is most likely from China, which does make sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the first written mentions of noodles was in a Chinese dictionary, which was dated from the 3rd century Common Era. And it talks about dumplings, which were not long strands, but they were kind of like a little bit more gnocchi-esque. So they were called mian pian, which is a dish that's still eaten in China, and it's kind of born out of bread making. So it's really thin, tiny pieces of dough that are cut up and boiled in water. Mm. So they're kind of similar to dumplings, but this was like maybe the first noodle. And then in 2005, archaeologists found the oldest surviving physical... They are so well preserved. If you looked at them, it looks like someone put their noodles out like 5 days ago, forgot about them, they dried up a bit.
It's kind of like Pompeii vibes. They're 4,000 years old, right?
Exactly. So this was in the Lajie site, which is in northwestern China, and it was buried under lots of kind of silty soil. So kind of like, you know how peat bogs preserve things really well, very low oxygen environment. So they found these really kind of long, thin yellow strands. They think millet noodles.
Well, they were still yellow.
Still yellow in colour, bowl.
They were all the sediment that was under, they think it might have been like an earthquake or a flood. Somebody put their lovely bowl of noodles out, and then unfortunately
my noodles
never got to eat them, sadly. But unbelievable, the preservation.
Do look it up, it's so beautiful. So yeah, and then they spread all over the world. There's also a really early mention of them in the Talmud, which is the kind of ancient Jewish religious text. They talk about string-like noodle made with semolina, which is dried before cooking. So that's maybe like more on the pasta end.
Lots of noodles in Jewish cooking, worth saying.
Noodles are old. They're really, really old, really, really tasty. And I was looking into the etymology of noodle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a quiet word. We have no idea where it comes from, really. So the English noodle comes from the German noodle. Mm-hmm. And it stops there. And we think it might be related to the Latin minutulus, which is tiny or very, very small.
Miniature. Yeah.
That's interesting because often in, for example, Chinese and even a bit in Korean, Japanese, a little bit in Malaysian, there is a sort of like framework for the word of noodle. And it's like either mian, mien, men, or me.
Mm-hmm. Kind of mini.
And it makes me think of minutulus. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Anyway.
Biang, is it Biang noodles?
Biang.
Mm-hmm. Like, apparently the character Biang is one of the most complicated Chinese characters to write. It's got like 50 strokes inside,
insane.
Depending on the version. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kind of like a bowl of noodles
in
itself.
I'm going to order it on the menu just to say thank you for printing this character.
Yeah.
Those are the like bang, the ones that are slapped on the table really hard.
Stretched and slapped. Yeah.
Oh, they're so good. And then the slang noodle for head doesn't have anything to do with noodles, we don't think. We think it's more linked to noddle, which is slang for like head, to nod.
Oh, I see. So it's nothing to do with like your noodle.
That's
I did always wonder because they don't look like noodles, heads.
Because your hair does, so maybe your hair is like
maybe
noodles.
Your hair does, yeah. Did you ever have the like Play-Doh extruder that you can make pasta?
I actually smell that as soon as you said it. Like,
Play-Doh has such a strong smell.
She's like baby Rosie being like, making my own pasta.
Mom, would you like some ramen?
Monday.com ad was created by a team of people and AI agents. The agents wrote the copy and managed the timelines, while our human creative director made sure it all made sense. Easy. Create your own AI agent today on Monday.com.
As I told you, noodles are just one of my favorite foods of all time, and I brought you one of my favorite noodle dishes. It's not laksa. It's a vat kol.
Oh.
Ooh.
This is bibimguksu, aka Korean spicy cold noodles.
Beautiful stuff. Look at that. A very generous helping. Mm-hmm.
As I think I've mentioned about 100 times, I am obsessed with Korean food and I'm obsessed with Korea. I went on my honeymoon in 2024, had the best time. 5 days in Seoul was not enough. I'm desperate to go back. If you have a chance to go to Korea anytime soon, I thoroughly recommend it. It was one of the best places I've ever been to and I'm completely in love with it. And bibimguksu is one of many different cold noodle dishes that they serve in Korea.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually made a recipe that's kind of going viral at the moment, or a version of a recipe that's going viral, because in this recipe, there is ketchup in the sauce.
Ooh.
But that's not traditional, but it is actually very delicious. The sauce is made from gochujang, which is a Korean fermented chili paste, gochugaru, which are Korean chili flakes, garlic, vinegar, sesame oil, ketchup, as I mentioned, plenty of sugar, because one of my favorite things about Korean food, and probably East and Southeast Asian cooking in general, is that they actually really take sugar seriously as an ingredient, and they really balance their dishes with sweetness. Like spicy is also sweet and is tangy and is not sour necessarily all the time. Like there's always sugar in a present. And we're, as Westerners, very afraid of using sugar because of like dietary, healthy, like...
Yeah, stigma.
Stigma.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Isn't Korea like one of the healthiest?
Totally. Yeah. They have an incredibly healthy diet and they eat amazing, healthy food.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously like cold noodle dishes are particularly popular in summer. And this is a really good one for, you know, cooling down, even though it is spicy, because it's just ice cold. Like the noodles are cooked and then washed in cold water, so you wash off all that starch, which means that they don't clag, they don't stick together, they're very separate when you tweezer them with your...
The Korean chopsticks are different as well, aren't they?
They're often metal. I think they're exclusively metal. I don't know. I find them really hard.
They're really slippery and they do look a lot more like tweezers.
Yeah. Bibimguksu specifically is made with somyon or somen in Japanese, also called shimian or sumian in Chinese, basically means small noodle. So they're a thin noodle, a wheat starch noodle, though. They're not a rice noodle. They're a wheat starch noodle. And it's kind of like vermicelli-esque, more like an angel hair vibe than anything. Anyway, just love it. And I'd love for you to try it. And you've also got pickled cucumbers and kimchi on top of it. And both of the pickled juices from both are in the sauce as well.
Oh, nice.
Let's dig in.
It's all, whenever you bring anything, Rosie, I am listening to you. But until we taste it, I'm just like,
can we just dig in?
There's sesame seeds in here too.
That is great. Our notes are just covered in noodle sauce now. I can't read anything.
So, as I think is the case in many of the countries where noodles are a number one carb, they're very symbolic of long life. But in Korea as well, they're actually quite luxurious. As you may or may not know, Korea's had quite a storied past, like a lot of colonialism from other countries, specifically China and Japan. For, you know, periods of their existence, it was really hard to grow wheat. So rice was the main starch, the main carb. Wheat came into its own post-Korean War because they actually suffered from chronic rice shortages. So they had to figure out a way to grow wheat. And also Americans brought over different wheat crops and stuff. And that's also coincides with when the first instant noodles were available to Korean public as well.
Which I will be talking about later.
Which you will be talking about later. So, you know, they're not as like prolific in Korean cuisine as in some other East and Southeast Asian cuisines, but they are very, very important. One of my favorite facts that I learned when I was looking up a little bit about Korean noodle lore is that one of the places that you should, you must serve and eat noodles is weddings. They are, you know, good luck. They symbol a long and prosperous life and all of these, like, you know, important things for newly married couples.
But there's a nice white dress there that's going to get covered in sauce. I must,
they don't eat like we do. They eat so much neater. Like, we are bad at eating noodles.
What colour is the traditional Korean wedding?
I actually don't know.
It might not be white.
It might be red or something.
Strategically,
yeah.
Bright
red. It might be stain-coloured.
So there is a special wedding noodle dish called Chanchi Guksu, which translates to banquet noodles. And they were traditionally only eating at weddings in the past because of that lack of wheat and stuff like that. And they're sort of light noodles in a crisp anchovy broth and topped with green onions and carrots and black seaweed and yellow and white egg. And it's very, you know, beautiful rainbow colours. Anyway, because weddings and noodles are so intertwined, if you're at a wedding and someone asks you, when are we going to eat your noodles? It could mean one or two things. It could mean, A, are you getting married soon? Like, let's say you're in a relationship and you might actually be getting married soon or might be getting engaged. The other version, the other meaning is, are you looking for a relationship? Like, when are we going to eat your noodles? Like, is that, are you open for business?
I feel like the creepy uncle at the wedding would ask both versions of that question.
Totally.
Oh my God. I'm going to start using that as a chat up line.
Yeah, it's a great chat up line. I really advise you to try that. There's another very famous Korean cold noodle dish called naengmyeon. You might have heard of naengmyeon before. So that's actually buckwheat noodles. So it's a different type of wheat starch to the ones that we have here. And they're served in an icy cold beef and anchovy broth. Like, so icy cold that there are lumps of ice in the broth. But it's extremely highly seasoned. Again, sugary, sweet, a bit savoury, like super savoury,
This to counteract the coldness of it? Because I think we've spoken about eating really, really cold food, say like ice cream, and then you have to give it more welly because the temperature affects your taste buds.
So when you make your naengmyeon beef broth, you do want to like over season it so that when it is chilled, it's going to be very flavourful. What I wanted to talk about was, why are noodles good cold and pasta is not? Maybe even more importantly, what is the difference between noodles and pasta fundamentally? Like, why are they different? Why are they used differently? Why are they treated differently?
Why are we not sitting here with Rosie McKean Noodle Queen?
Well,
it still has a good ring to it.
It has another something life. To do, begins with C and ends with ultra appropriation. I'm sure a lot of you will actually know all of this. I don't want to teach you suck eggs, but the reason why pasta noodles are different is because they are made with different types of wheat. Primarily, the fact that pasta is made specifically from durum wheat. durum wheat has like a sort of high protein structure, mm-hmm. Whereas noodles can be made from, as you've already said, a multitude of different starches. Rice, buckwheat, sweet potato, regular potato. The other thing is that pasta is generally extruded. Mm-hmm. Like fresh pasta, yes, it's cut. You know, there's egg pasta and then there's hand-rolled water pastas, but they're both also made with durum wheat semolina or durum wheat. So they're still not similar to noodles in like any kind of textural way. But yeah, extruding is a very pasta-centric thing. You do get extruded noodles, but they're less prevalent than you do than
when
in
you
the
say
pasta.
Extruded, that's like squished.
Super high pressure.
The Fisher Price.
The Play-Doh thing. Yeah. Come on, it's the Play-Doh thing. But I did want to examine a bit why noodles are really good cold and really hold their own cold.
Mm-hmm. And why we should stop making cold
why
pasta
are we making pasta salad
for lunch.
I will say I have grown fonder of pasta salads of late, mainly thanks to my friend Tom Jackson's book Cool Pasta, which is a literal pasta salad book. And I don't want to do him dirty by saying everyone that pasta salads aren't good when he's written this book, but his recipes are amazing, and there's lots of noodle recipes in it too, to be fair.
Nice.
But generally speaking, pasta isn't built to be made to eat cold for loads of reasons. So pasta, as I said, it's made from coarse durum semolina. It has a higher protein structure. So when it's cooled, the starch molecules crystallize, and that makes the pasta feel really dense, really stiff, sometimes quite rubbery. I'm sure you've all noticed this when you've cooked pasta and left it in your fridge over a couple of days.
Slimy.
And noodles are made with much finer milled flours, much softer wheats and rice or starches, which, you know, are completely gluten-free, and they stay springy and soft even after they've been cooked, which they will always be cooked in water unless they've been reconstituted fried for the older instant noodles. And that allows them to stay springy and soft and basically not be ruined by the cooking process. You do have to, of course, like when you are making cold noodles for anything, you should instantly stop the cooking with cold water, iced water if you can, and rinse them really well, because that rinses off the excess starch that will definitely be present on the surface of the noodle. So if you don't do that, then you will potentially get a bit of clag. That's one reason why noodles are better eaten cold than pasta. Pasta is also just like designed to absorb sauce, like it's because of that coarse flour. It is really porous, and so it soaks up liquid. It soaks up that stuff, and it continues absorbing liquid after it's been cooked.
So it's quite bloated by the time you get it out again.
Totally. Yeah. Like, if you've ever had, like, mac and cheese that you can slice into pieces.
It's quite good, though.
I mean, obviously, it's delicious.
It's a type of mac and cheese, like, it's a legit type. So basically, that can happen. Like, the pasta solidifies, the sauce can even solidify, it's waxy. It just is just not a good way to eat it. The other thing that makes pasta porous is the extrusion, the method used to make it. It makes it highly porous. It creates that sort of Velcro surface, right? Pasta was not designed to be eaten cold. I'm sorry. That's what I'm going to die on that hill. It can be done very well. Tom Jackson, you did a lovely job. But
Why eat
a pasta salad? That Sainsbury's mayonnaise and sweet corn pasta salad, are you kidding me?
The worst one for me is when you've made one, you put it in the fridge, and then you pour it out of the Tupperware, it's literally like it's like a rubber fake food, and you've just got these horrible blanched like pale bits of pasta that are like sweaty. Oh, it's so nasty.
So I suppose what I'm trying to say here is, like, if you're a big noodle fan, keep like trying cold noodle recipes, because there's such a wide world of like delicious, challenging temperature things. I don't know if it's a postpartum thing, but I'm so into like extreme hots and colds at the moment with my food, and noodles are so good cold, and they're a great like prep ahead food for that reason. As long as you're washing them really, really, really well, like, I can't overstate it. Do not stop until that water that's coming off runs clear. It's like the reverse of rice. Wash the rice before till the water runs clear.
When you're washing them, are you like zhuzhing them up with your hand.
Mm. Yeah, I kind of like do a little sort of like...
Because that is texturally one of the most satisfying feelings. Totally. You know, you're washing rice or any kind of pulse and your hands are just like... Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it's such so a... It, and it makes me feel like an old Chinese grandma. Oh, in the best way.
I did have a question
just
on cold pasta really quickly. If you're not... I mean, obviously you can make beautiful pasta salad, but if it's not the best thing to do... What can you do with all of your leftover pasta that definitely will happen if I'm making it? Because I can never get the portion
it's
right.
It's not a problem raising I've ever
had yeah, before. I literally...
I really understand what question
I'm increasing my pasta portions every day and I still don't get any leftovers. Okay. I eat it all.
No, it does not exist.
A really good thing to do is like a little frittata. Like it's great in an egg-based dish.
Okay.
And also you can make... Like fried spaghetti or pasta croquettes, mm-hmm. like you know, mixed with a bit of bechamel.
Oh, Manny puts effort in. Still leaving it cold. Make some croquettes, okay?
Fine.
Okay. And it's not the worst. It's not like it's like sacrilege. Like I'm not saying throw away cold pasta. I'm just saying,
you're saying if you're a regular cold
intentionally
pasta
yeah. use noodles. Don't mm-hmm. use pasta yeah. for cold yeah. carb dishes like this.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's my lot. And that's why Korean food is the best food in the world. Okay, if you've got room, it's time for our second lunchbox. And I can already see I'm going to be absolutely spent after this. Alex, take it away.
I have brought you instant noodles.
Yay!
So many instant noodles.
Yeah, it's like an instant noodle tasting flight.
Okay. Right, I'm boil the kettle and you crack into these.
Okay, we're prepping the noodles.
All right.
Okay, who wants to go first? Okay. Manu, shall I pour yours?
Yes, please. Popping the lid on. Steamy boy.
And then this one.
Okie dokie. Well, we'll just let these stew for a bit.
As it were.
I picked up these... Last night after work, I did one of my favourite things, which is go to Chinatown mm-hmm. and go into one of the Asian supermarkets
mm-hmm.
and just have a wander around and go as far deep as I can. It's kind of it's like going into Narnia.
It's you a know, great time.
It's brilliant. The best time.
You know, you'll go down the aisle, then you'll turn a corner, then you'll find a second room, mm-hmm. you'll go down a bit further.
Mm-hmm.
Like the food will get less and less like Western and more authentically mm-hmm. Asian. And then you'll find like there's a staircase and then there's another floor.
Yeah.
And then there's a butcher and then there's like an aquarium. and then like there's a whole storage room and then you go to the storage room and there's a whole other bit. There's like a lot of back rooms energy to these places. It's brilliant.
So
and there's just such an amazing variety of instant noodles. Mm-hmm. And so I picked up a pretty random selection.
Oh, thanks.
I thought we could do a little bit of a tasting.
Yay! Okay, so I'm spotting some Vietnamese.
Yep.
That one is Vietnamese. This is Korean. This one is... In French.
Oh.
I think it might be Chinese.
We've got some chicken. We've got some special chicken. We've got some prawn. We've got some...
These are doenjang.
Roast beef flavour.
Mm-hmm.
In all the TikToks I watch of people cooking their whole meal in like 7-Elevens, they have... Korea and Japan and most of Southeast Asia, they'll have like microwaves and loads of
I've seen those.
Equipment in the 7-Eleven for you to cook your dinner in.
Like a proper kitchen.
And they will like pour hot water and then microwave their noodles, then pour all the water out, then add all the sauces, then put tteokbokki and then put it back in the thing.
Mm.
God, it's great television that. I love watching it. But a lot of the like ASMR of those videos is them opening the packets.
Totally.
Oh, it is a good noise. I was going to say, can I recommend the book Convenience Store Women?
I want to read it.
It is so good.
What is it about?
It is about a woman that works in a convenience store, written by a woman that used to work in a convenience store for 18 years.
Wow.
Adventure.
It's very, very nice.
All right.
Okay,
should we crack in?
Yeah. Sorry.
What flavor is this one?
Salted egg shrimp.
Oh.
Oh, that is good. That is savory. There are crunchy bits in it. I don't know what they are.
I just... So good. Should you be slurping your noodles right now?
Oh, I mean, depends where you are in the world.
Yes.
I'd say in this country, no.
No, we don't like, we're very anti-food noise.
Yeah, absolutely completely not. Eating with your mouth open, big no. Slurping, kind of a no. But in other countries, in Asian countries with lots of noodle shops, especially Japan, it's not regarded as rude in the same way.
And scientifically, it's a better way to eat it because sucking in and like drawing things in like through your nose and through your mouth, like it increases the amount of aroma that hits your palate.
Totally.
So it's a better way to eat it.
Yeah.
Retronasal olfaction is what it's called. Yeah. When you say when you're drinking wine and you're tasting it and you do that like sucky up bit. That's getting the flavour into the back of your nose. I also read another thing just quickly on etiquette. You know the when we've broken our chopsticks?
Yes.
Apart?
Oh, yeah.
Because there's a thing about rubbing them together to get rid of the splinters.
What is that?
So I think for us now, we could do that and it's totally fine. But if you're in a country where people like actually care about their chopsticks and hosting, that is very rude, rubbing them together, because it implies that they have low quality chopsticks.
Right. I guess it's a bit like sharpening someone else's knife ostentatiously before you turn.
So don't do that. Also, don't cut your noodles. Because that is bad juju.
I actually think it's also bad etiquette to leave your chopsticks in, leave them on the side.
On the side.
Because I remember there was a big uproar in the food styling world a few years ago, probably around COVID, when, you know, a cultural appropriation hit the headlines a bit. But where basically, like, a lot of brands had no idea that you shouldn't cross chopsticks or you shouldn't leave them dunked inside something. Like, you always leave them on the side, or you leave them in the
Same with Western cutlery. Like, when you're done or whatever, you put them, you don't leave your fork stuck
in the middle of the thing. Yeah. But people, you know, for the props and the look of it, people were just like, oh, and let's put the chopsticks there, you know?
Yeah. About 123 billion servings of instant noodle are eaten around the world every year.
Whoa.
Wow.
That's 337 million every day, which is about 15 packs for every person on Earth every year.
Okay. Every person on Earth. Sorry, I'm not eating that. Who's eating my 15? Someone's eating them.
Do you not eat instant noodles that much?
You are entitled legally to your 15 packs.
I know. Yeah. Well, now I can eat at least like 50 something a day. Yeah. Yeah. Catch up.
I eat them a lot. Tom and I love instant noodles, but as parents, they're a bit of a saver. Mm-hmm. Also, because if I know that the carb is taken care of and it's going to be really quick to make, then I'm actually, I've got a bit of time on garnish. Like, you know, I can boil an egg, I can, you know, roast or slice or poach a chicken breast. Like, I can figure out some extra protein to go on top, no problem.
It is the most fun to zhuzh.
So fun to zhuzh. Okay, so how did we get this amazing convenience food? Where did it come from?
Let's talk about the invention of instant noodles.
Woohoo!
It is all down to a man called Momofuku Ando. He was born in 1910 in Japanese-ruled Taiwan. He was a bit of an entrepreneur. He started his first business while he was a teenager. I think he was selling...
As you do.
And then he moved to Osaka in his 20s, started several more businesses. He lost a lot of his wealth after the Second World War. And I think actually also spent a bit of time in prison for tax evasion. And I think that really changed his life and it turned him around. And in the 1950s, Japan, as you said earlier, was recovering from really serious food shortages after the war. And then he was like looking at all these queues of people waiting for food and became obsessed with trying to find a way of making ramen that anyone could prepare really quickly and easily at home. So he basically experimented for months in a shed behind his house. And in 1958, he invented something called chicken ramen, which is C-H-I-K-I-N.
Okay.
Chicken ramen. And he just did that he found that you could flash fry cooked noodles in oil and that would dry them to a point where you could then just rehydrate them just by adding boiling water.
Right.
Which is literally the product we have today, basically.
Yeah.
And it was actually, even though he was trying to create something really cheap, like a cheap mass market food, it was actually a bit of a luxury food for a while because it was more expensive than regular noodles.
Because of all the extra processes that have
exactly.
to go
and it
with
was
that.
Kind of, you know, a new invention. Anyway, he founded Nissin Foods, which, is now a massive company and, you know, you'll recognise the name.
They're everywhere.
It's one of the largest food companies in the world. And actually, it was a bit of a while later, in 1971, that he invented cup noodles, which was the real success, okay?
What?
And he got this because he noticed Americans breaking the instant noodles into cups and eating them with forks out of a cup as a kind of way of convenient food. So he was like, why don't we just sell them in the cup?
Yeah.
Kind of clever.
Genius.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was really evangelical about that he had a real philosophy behind his food. He had an employee handbook which had lots of phrases in it, like mankind is noodle kind, and he used to say peace will come when people have food. He was a really big believer that he could solve world hunger and war by giving everyone food. So that was the driving force behind what he did.
Right.
As well as, I'm sure, money. And
yeah, I mean,
he I've written here, he successfully died in 2007, aged 96. He died in 2007, a very successful man.
Yeah.
He was actively involved in the company until his 90s.
So, wow. Yeah. And also 96, fair innings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did well.
Our lifetime eating instant noodles, I imagine.
But am I right in saying that now not all instant noodles are fried and needed to rehydrate? Like as in...
No, there's so many different types now.
Yeah, yeah. Because these obviously are because they've been made in the cup. But mm-hmm. like... You can buy packet noodles that are actually basically just noodles. Like the Taiwanese knife cut noodles that you mm-hmm. can see now very frilly. I don't know if they've been fried or not.
So is the difference is these are already cooked?
These are already fried and then are rehydrated and
so you don't actually need to cook them.
That's part of the reason why they're wavy as well, because like kind of like the opposite of a radiator. You know how radiators are kind of that shape as well, to try and maximise mm-hmm. the amount of heat that the radiator can give off. Mm-hmm. The wavy shape maximises the surface area and the amount of heat that it can absorb.
Right.
And also it means that they're springy, so that they're less likely to snap when you transport them. Mm. So it's, and obviously way more compact as well.
Yeah,
so
you can have them in that square. Disc.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You might not know this, but how many instant noodles would you have to eat to die?
Oh, surely that's like a volume thing before it's a nutritional thing. I think this is a really growing concern
for Rosie. Yes, there is.
She's
asking urgently after mm-hmm. the second lunchbox. I don't have the answer. Jack would have the answer. He loves a lethal dose.
Yeah.
According to a poll done by the Fuji Research Institute in Japan in 2000, mm-hmm. instant noodles were voted the country's greatest invention of the 20th century.
Whoa. Wow.
So that's ahead of like karaoke and compact disc. Yeah.
Did you guys used to eat pot noodle at uni? I bet you didn't.
You know what? I love instant noodles, even though I don't eat them loads. Pot noodle is... It's like not this. It's, what is it?
No, it's very much British noodles.
It's not good.
I think for me, it's the peas.
Ooh.
That I don't actually like in a pot noodles. To put peas in them. And they're just never that good. Like, why am I eating a pea that's been dried and rehydrated?
Yeah, I think that's actually really fair.
Yeah.
But I actually, you know, I'm not going to sit here and be a complete snob about a pot noodle. I've definitely eaten my fair share of pot noodles, especially at university. Yeah. As you all know, I was living it loose.
Well, instant noodles generally in institutions have quite a big link, especially in prisons.
Really? Like, yeah, of course.
Instant noodles replaced cigarettes as currency in a lot of prisons.
Stop.
Not just because like of smoking bans, but also because I think especially in American prisons there's a real crisis with food quality in prisons. Mm-hmm. Like quality is really low, the funding has been cut, really problematic, and so noodles are actually a better source of food and health than a cigarette, you know. The last thing I have is some record breaking bowls of noodles.
Oh yeah.
So
Rosie McKean today.
Biggest bowl of noodles in Malaysia. This was just a national record for the Malaysia Book of Records.
Wait, and when you say biggest bowl, that was eaten or that wasn't eaten?
Well, this is the question, because a shopping centre in Malaysia made a 600 kilogram bowl of Sarawak laksa, but they had to apologise because they threw the whole thing away afterwards.
No.
Also, that's bad because Sarawak laksa is the best laksa.
They should have called you, Rosie.
I would have literally come and helped out.
I think the moment they threw it away at the other side of the world, Rosie went faint and screamed and collapsed and everyone, no one knew why. The current Guinness World Record for the longest single noodle is, guess how long? You will never guess.
A mile.
200 kilometres.
200 kilometres?
I don't know.
3 kilometres.
Okay.
Wow. Which is 1.9 miles.
That's silly.
Okay, I didn't win that one.
It was made by the Zhangyan Food Company in Nanyang in China in 2017 in October. Mm-hmm. It took 17 hours to make and 3 hours to measure. But it had to be one continuous unbroken noodle kneaded with like from 40 kilograms of flour, so they couldn't join it all together. They had to like roll it out. Isn't that amazing?
Wait, so were they not just adding bits of dough and rolling it? Did they have a massive ball?
They rolled the whole thing of dough.
How did they roll
And then they
that?
Rolled it, and I think you just, because they made it really stretchy and elastic, and so they'd roll and roll and roll, and then they'd roll one end, and then they'd move it along.
To make really stretchy and elastic, you have to knead it. Yeah. Like that's
a giant way you get the elasticity is
17 hours. Yeah,
a giant man or woman.
17 hours. It would be knackering.
And then it was served to 400 people who did eat it. So that would say that was a nice success. Yeah,
400. So because I was worrying about how many people that would actually serve.
Would you want the recipe? 40 kilograms of flour, 27 liters of water, 600 grams of salt.
600 kilograms of salt.
6 tons of salt.
That's so good. The giant bowl of laksa reminds me of there's a spa in Japan that used to offer bathers ramen broth to bathe in.
Ooh. Really?
Yeah. So they claimed that the collagen in it, basically they took leftover broth from a noodle shop nearby, whacked it in their baths, and they were like, the collagen's really good for you, really good for your metabolism, it's health boosting. But the whole shtick was just making food and drink oriented spa baths.
Right. like so the human soups.
Yeah, kind of.
That's kind of like, wasn't it the beef broth up in the, yeah, like, in London in, like, a few hundred years ago?
Well, they're still doing it in Japan. Or they were. This was in 2007, Yone-san Spa in Hokona. But they also did green tea, sake, coffee, and red wine baths.
Coffee.
But yeah, look at it.
What would you... That does look amazing, actually.
It's so good.
No, there's... Yes. Oh, a red wine one is actually really cool.
I know, it looks
what would
great.
You bathe in? If you could.
Melted butter.
Oh.
Mm. I was actually thinking melted ice at the end of the...
Although it would be really, really, really hard to get that off.
Yeah, you'd be slimy and slippery by the end of it.
It might also be a bit sour.
I was thinking melted ice cream.
Yeah, I was just thinking
on a cool, on a hot day. Yeah.
It would be good. Mm. Mm.
This Monday.com ad was created by a team of people and AI agents. The agents wrote the copy and managed the timelines, while our human creative director made sure it all made sense. Easy. Create your own AI agent today on Monday.com.
Gosh, as if I even have room, we do have to move on to our third and final lunchbox. And it's from My Sweet Manu, and I've heard a rumor that it is actually edible today.
Today it is edible. I have brought pad thai.
Mmm.
10 points if you can tell me where this dish is from.
Thailand!
All right then, tell us where it's from.
It's referred to in Thailand as a Chinese noodle dish.
Oh.
So, its longer name in Thailand is Kway Tiao Pad Thai.
Mm-hmm.
And the Kway Tiao is the term for these specific Chinese rice noodles.
Right.
This is technically the national dish of Thailand. But it has a really recent history, and it's a really nice way to think about, like, Thai's modern food culture and also Thai gastro diplomacy, which is basically, like, a very fancy word for how food can help you take over the world. So pad thai, really, really simply, is a kind of flat rice noodle tossed in a sweet, sour and salty sauce made of tamarind paste and fish sauce and sugar. It's, like, really heavy on the fish sauce. And then you can add scrambled eggs and bean sprouts, tofu, any kind of protein. And it is delicious.
Isn't it also characterized by being stir fried? Like, that is the most important thing, is fried.
It's a fried noodle.
Yeah.
So it's not saucy. It's quite dry.
Yeah.
Really, really, really umami delicious. It has a very murky and confusing history. But the one thing everyone can agree on is that the fried noodle element, the thing that makes it, is super Chinese.
Right.
So in about the 12th century CE,
mm-hmm.
there was a big wave of Chinese immigration into Thailand. And it boomed in the 1800s. And by the early 1900s, about a seventh of Thailand's population was of Chinese descent. So it's an incredibly large Chinese community in Thailand. So people were cooking and eating Chinese-style noodles anyway. And the reason it became this kind of Thai dish and, like, the idea of Thai-ness exploded is due to, like, quite a specific moment in history in the 1900s. So there's a historian of a university in Bangkok called Chatichai Maksong, who thinks that there are a few different reasons why the pad thai became the dish that it is today.
Right.
And one of them involves a really, really big flood during World War II, which destroyed a load of rice paddies. And the prime minister at the time was like, maybe we should encourage people to eat more noodles rather than rice as a way to, like, keep the population eating well, like, kind of lessen the dependence on, like, straight up rice dishes. He says that at this time, people weren't really eating pad thai as we know it today. The kind of dishes they were eating were still this, like, very, very Chinese noodle, the kind of precursor to the pad thai. And he thinks that one of the most important developments was the kind of influx of American soldiers into Thailand during the Vietnam War. And this kind of introduction of foreigners and like basically tourists, even though it was a really tumultuous time, it kind of inspired the need to come up with like a distinctly Thai identity. And pad Thai, this like fried noodle dish, became a way to like sell something that was really, really delicious. It had a little bit of a spin on it, but it was kind of an invented identity food. So it's more this like kind of urge to sell Thailand to foreigners than like it being a big kind of bit of culinary history in Thailand.
Because that's a really big thing they do, right? Like, yeah. The Thai government have always really pushed Thai culture, yeah. Like, and for tourism purposes, mm-hmm. into other
because it's a really small country, yeah. But they're really, really famous. And Thai food is insane. Like, yeah. When I went, some of the best food I've ever eaten.
Yeah.
But you don't. I wasn't getting served pad Thai all over the place.
No, it's like completely not, you know, their favorite.
But it's funny, isn't it? There are so many elements of culture that we sell as a commodity, or we try and push mm-hmm. it on other countries because we realize we can make money. It's good to our stage, yeah. But we rarely mm-hmm. push food. Most countries just seem to allow that to kind of happen naturally. Mm-hmm. And like Thailand really realized, like, this is a commodity we can sell.
They did exactly that. So they did really, really well. If you think about it, like going in this country, going for a Thai, like yeah. going to a Thai restaurant, wasn't really a thing until the early noughties. And this is specifically because in 2002, the Thai government launched the Global Thai Program, which was a diplomatic initiative to specifically promote its food abroad. So they right. invested about £20 million.
How clever.
It Amazing. Was genius in like training and grants and visa programs and like business advice to people who wanted to open Thai restaurants abroad. And at the time, there were only about kind of 5,000 to 5,500 Thai restaurants around the world. And within a few years, about 7 years, this had doubled. And today it's well over like 17,000. It also worked the opposite way around. So Thai restaurants are doing really well around the world. And because of this Thai presence internationally, it exploded tourism in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
So between 2001 and 2019, the number of tourists going to Thailand every year rose from about 10 million to 40 million.
Incredible.
Which is insane.
So clever.
It's a bit like, I mean, you know, the more recent version is like Dubai. Having this influencer program where it encourages people, you literally sign up on their website to register to be an influencer, mm-hmm. and then they'll pay for you to move over, and they'll help find you a job and accommodation in exchange for like doing all of your content, which then goes to, so like this like Dubai social media phenomenon mm-hmm. isn't like a natural thing that's happened.
That's curated by the government.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. very like really Whoa. Like it's a petri dish situation where like they've been trying to like build this culture.
So the Dubai chocolate we were talking about, that mukbang moment,
she might have been a Dubai
may well have been enhanced. It's not as black and white as they were being paid by this, but like she could have had grants, they could have given her like special visas to come and live and work on the basis they're doing it as an influencer.
That's mad. Would you guys do it?
If there was a different country, yeah. Like I would love to go and live in Korea. Korea, let's chat about the influencer program for Rosie McKee. That is it for this week's edition of Lunchbox Envy.
You can follow our socials for foodie facts and podcast updates. We are on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram and TikTok at Lunchbox Envy Pod.
Yes, you can also get in touch, send us your facts, recipes, questions or suggestions for future topics by emailing us lunchbox@qi.com.
Rosie, do you have any parting oodly noodly recipes for us?
Yes, well, I'm going to recommend that everyone looks up the recipe for bibim guksu. I really like a mang cheese recipe that's online. But also we'll make sure that the content creator whose recipe I made today, that is posted on the website so you can all check it out.
Yes.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Lunchbox Envy was hosted by Alex Bell, Manu Onrio and me, Rosie McKean. It was produced by Alex Bell. This has been a quite interesting podcast.